From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
He's pulling away by three. Jorge Chavez and Monarcos have won the Kentucky Derby. And the final time was 1:59.45. He was as fast as Secretariat.
Arrowgate, full out. Can he stick with him? California Chrome. Arrowgate still coming. California Chrome. Arrowgate steals the show in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum. Presented by Red Brand Fence.
It's Ali Dar and Affirm battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirmed under a left-hand whip. Ali Dar on the outside driving. Affirmed and Ali Dar heads apart. Affirm's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
The Derby winner, Barnett Bird, closing a late gap. But it is Rachel Alexandra. She's simply above and beyond them. A filly has won the Preakness.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, fulfilling one of our HRN slogans for you again this morning as we take the show back on the road to ensure that we continue to be your home for racing's biggest events. It is a picture-perfect morning here at Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida. Temperatures closing in on the 70-degree mark. We should end up somewhere in the upper 70s by the time we get into the racing program later this afternoon, and there is not a cloud to be found anywhere in those powder blue skies overhead. The turf course, which still has a little bit of that morning dew on it, is illuminated in sunshine, and the horses continue to go through their morning training on the main track. It is going to be a spectacular afternoon for what promises to be a tremendous racing card, with the Pegasus World Cup and the Pegasus World Cup turf highlighting all of the action. And of course, this is going to be an afternoon where we get to come back for a second time, where we get to bring you coverage of the Pegasus. That coverage presented by Red Brand and the FTBOA, 4 to 6 Eastern Time, Sirius 219, XM 201, and you can stream us worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. The first three runnings of the Pegasus have been won by Arrowgate, Gunrunner, and City of Light. Not too shabby. But the story surrounding this year's 10-horse Pegasus field is probably much more about the horses that are not going to be competing than the ones that will be in some respects. Thursday morning, things kind of fell apart a little bit. Two significant announcements were made regarding key decisions to this year's field, key defections, if you will. First, it was the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile winner, Spun to Run, who was declared out of the Pegasus with a skin infection. And later that morning came news that morning line favorite Omaha Beach would be scratched after Hall of Fame trainer Richard Mandela said that he observed Omaha Beach had some light swelling in his right hind fetlock. You talk about a hard pill to swallow for Richard and for the connections of Omaha Beach. If this was the first time that something like this had happened to Omaha Beach, you'd say, well, okay, maybe it's a little easier to handle. Things happen in racing. These kind of things happen all the time. But it's the second time, and it's the second time that it's happened before a major race. You remember it was 3 days before the Kentucky Derby when Omaha Beach was set to go postward as the favorite in the run for the roses that he had to scratch because of a throat issue. Well, he won't make his final career start here this afternoon. It won't take anything away from everything that Omaha Beach accomplished. And we just, as racing fans and as an industry, I think we're somewhat saddened by these developments with Omaha Beach, because he obviously had all kinds of talent and does have all kinds of talent, but we never got to see the true Omaha Beach and how good he could really be because of these issues that kept popping up. But he's off to a stud career now. He'll stand at Spendthrift Farm, and you'll get a chance to go see him there in Lexington. He'll have plenty of suitors, I would imagine, because of that great talent and that great speed. But unfortunately, we will not see Omaha Beach later this afternoon. Some other notable changes to this year's running of the Pegasus. Well, it's going to be the first time that the Pegasus World Cup and the Pegasus World Cup turf have been run medication-free. No Lasix for any of the contenders in either of those two races. It's a move that the Stronach Group hopes will lead them to being medication-free in all of their greatest stakes starting next year. You also have the reduction in the purses this year. Remember last year, the Pegasus World Cup was $9 million. It's down to $3 million this year. The turf was $7 million a year ago, dropped all the way to $1 million here in 2020. But when you talk about the turf, doesn't seem like that really affected the quality of the field. You have 12 horses. It's a Breeders' Cup type race because you have 12 horses, 7-2 morning line favorite. That is Irish bred Magic Wand for trainer Aiden O'Brien, the folks at Coolmore, Michael Tabor, this is John Magner and Derek Smith. Ryan Moore, Ireland's champion jockey, is going to be aboard. Magic Wand is the favorite in the turf. Should be a good one. Post time for the turf, 4:49 Eastern, 5:34 Eastern for the Pegasus World Cup. And again, our coverage this afternoon, 4-6 Eastern here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Thursday night, Gulfstream hosted the Eclipse Awards. We were privileged to receive a second Eclipse Award here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and it is somewhat surreal, and it really is an honor and a privilege to be able to bring you these shows and our race coverage each and every year. And for all of those who took home hardware Thursday night, congratulations. It is not easy to do. It's not easy to do if you're an owner, a trainer, a breeder. This is a tough game. We say it all the time. You got to have your big boy pants on if you're going to play in the sport of thoroughbred racing. And to achieve an Eclipse Award and to have that type of season is really special. So to every horse, to every human who took home a trophy on Thursday, congratulations. That is not easy to do. You should be very proud. I'm going to be joined by one of those individuals. Jeff Bloom of Bloom Racing is going to join me to talk about his champion older female, Midnight Bisou, look back on her campaign in 2019, and look ahead to the Saudi Cup. That's going to be her next engagement. Should be fun to talk to Jeff coming up at 8:35 Eastern. You're going to hear from trainer Chad Brown, who just continues to rack up his accolades in what is sure to be a future Hall of Fame career. Chad's going to be, well, he won't be here in person. He caught up with Bobby Newman yesterday at Palm Meadows, and you're going to hear that interview shortly after 9 o'clock Eastern time. Mike Welsh is going to be with me from the Daily Racing Forum, 9 o'clock Eastern. The Houston Ladies Classic takes place today at Sam Houston. It's a huge day of racing down at Sam Houston. I'll talk to Chris Griffin about that. He'll be with me at 9:20. And toward the end of the program, right around 9:40 Eastern, Lonnie Powell, the CEO and Executive Vice President of the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association, will be with me here as well. But when I come back, this has been Gunrunner Week all week long on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Three Chimneys. And I'm going to visit with Doug Cawthon from Three Chimneys. He's here in person. He's the vice chairman, and he has a lot to say about the great Gunrunner. We'll talk to him when I come back. Stay with me. It's the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust KeepSafe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about KeepSafe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
Lord Nelson, one of only three sprinters last decade to win three Grade Ones in a single year, along with champions Run Happy and Mattoli. His three consecutive Grade One victories included a stakes record performance in 107 3/5 in Del Mar's historic Bing Crosby Stakes.
Lord Nelson, a dominating performance, easy in the Bing Crosby.
An unrivaled blend of elite speed and pedigree. Lord Nelson, Pulpit's last great son. Look for his first yearling selling this summer. Spendthrift. The Breeders' Farm.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bisou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Gunrunner, the leading earner, best son, and heir to the Great Candy Ride, a 10-time Greatest Stakes winner, including six Grade Ones, who retired with earnings of nearly $16 million. Gunrunner is now stamping his stock with quality foals that have lots of size, are great movers, and very athletic. the number one leading weanling freshman sire, with First Crop Weanling selling for up to $750,000, and the number one leading freshman sire at the recently concluded Keeneland January sale. Horse of the Year, Gunrunner, standing at Three Chimneys.
With 24 individual winners, 4 stakes winners, and 11 stakes horses, champion-elect freshman sire American Pharoah has made a stunning start at stud. The 2015 Triple Crown champion is developing into a truly international sire, with winners in 6 different countries. American Pharoah also became the sire of the highest-priced horse sold anywhere in the world in 2019, when his yearling filly out of Leslie's Lady sold for $8.2 million at Keeneland September to Mandy Pope. With his book nearly full, hurry and call the team at Ashford to book your mare before it's too late.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you, with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Stallion Spotlight, presented by Red Brand Fence.
But it is fantastic to take them coast to coast in the United Nations.
It is going to be Palace, Malice, and Mike Smith in the Belmont Stakes.
As they come down for the finish, it's Sharp Azteca, and he was sharp as can be today to win the Cigar Mile.
And those will take charge. Moreno and Orbis, they come down to the finish. We'll take charge with the late surge. We'll take charge is surging. And it's a photo finish. It's too close to call.
Gunrunner needs another 16th. It's Gunrunner in front. He'll go out a winner. He's the horse of the year. And he's Gunrunner with an unforgettable performance in the Pegasus World Cup.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence. How about that montage of the Three Chimneys Stallions? You can see all of them if you go to threechimneys.com. But this has been Gunrunner Week all week long on the network. It continues all the way through our broadcast of the Pegasus World Cup this afternoon as we celebrate the Horse of the Year, who earned nearly $16 million on the racetrack while winning 6 Grade 1 events, including that Pegasus World Cup. And he was so spectacular in so many of his races. And I am privileged now to be joined by Doug Cawthon, who is the vice chairman of Three Chimneys, to talk more about Gunrunner, about what he's doing now as a stallion, and about some of the other stallions standing at Three Chimneys. Doug, good morning, and how about this scene at Gulfstream Park?
Oh, it's a great day. This is why everybody comes down to South Florida.
Yeah, pretty special. And you know, you sit here and you look out at the racetrack like we're doing. We're just past the finish line, and you think about that performance by Gunrunner a few years back. Just so powerful. I mean, he's such a big, good-looking horse. He's passing that on to his babies now, which we'll talk about. But when you think back on that career, and I say the name Gunrunner, what comes to mind?
Just brilliance and consistency. I mean, he did it all. And, you know, you could count on him to show up every time he ran. He ran off all those Grade One wins as a 4-year-old and at the end of his 3-year-old year, and to finish it up here was pretty special, especially considering how, you know, he had to run hard when he won the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah. I talked to Steve Asmussen at the Eclipse Awards the other night, and of course Steve, the trainer of Gunrunner, he came on the show with Anthony Stabile earlier this week on our Red Brand Radio show, and I told him, hey, Steve, thank you for coming on the show. It's great to celebrate a horse like Gunrunner. And he said, I'm always happy to talk about him.
Yeah, no, he gets a pretty good smile when you talk about Gunrunner.
Yeah, we talked to Florent Giroux earlier this week as well, and I asked him if he'd ever find another Gunrunner, and he said, you know, I don't think I will. This horse was just so good on the racetrack, and now as a stallion, starting to pass along those qualities to his offspring.
He really is, and that's the neat thing. Obviously, he was popular. He's had a wonderful performance. He's very well put together, and he's got an amazing pedigree. But so everybody was there to breed nice mares to him, and he had a lot of foals. But when you start seeing him going around and look at him, and then mainly, you know, the market tells you where you stand. And when they came to the November sale, he was really passing on just great athleticism. They were all beautiful movers, and that would be a comment you'd get from third party people that are putting down their money to buy them, the experts in the business. And it made you feel good. And then, you know, they were the leading averaging freshman sire, over 300,000. And then, you know, even in the January sale, he had a $300,000 baby there and a 290, and they just consistently move well, which all the experts are looking for, that athleticism. And then they're good sized, bigger than I think some people thought. Gunrunner's right at 16'2" himself. He's 16'1¾". And, you know, he's passing on more size than you'd expect. So it's a nice thing.
When you say good mover, for people that don't know what that means, what does that mean?
You know, I think it's just walking like a panther is the easiest way to explain it.
That's,
you know,
a great way to put it. I like that.
Yeah, I think they just glide over the ground. They use their limbs. They have flexion. And they just have nice balance so that, you know, all the parts are going in the right direction. That's what was special about him, you know, as well. And at the two-year-old sales, you know, he went to a two-year-old sale. He did not sell, but Steve Asmussen saw him before the sale, and they bought in half, and Three Chimneys stayed in for half. And it was that motion and that fluid action that he saw, and, you know, obviously – we saw it too and wanted to stay part of it. So it was kind of the beginning of a great relationship with Winchell Racing. And that's a concept that Gonzalo Torrealba is always trying to promote. Bring in good partners that have similar mindset to you and go race, you know. So, I mean, he sells a lot of the progeny that he raises, but he's always willing to support his product and partner up with people, which is nice when it works out like that.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring that up. When you think about Three Chimneys and the success that they've had historically, and there's been a lot of success at Three Chimneys, what's that philosophy that they work by now that allows them to have that kind of success?
Well, I think the Torrealba family has, first off, bought a lot of quality. You know, have over 75 quality mares, breed to good stallions, including their own, very much support their own stallions. Obviously, Gunrunner's gotten a tremendous support from Three Chimneys and from the partner, Ron Winchell. And, you know, have a good product. I mean, they bred two grade one winners that raced in 2019, Garana, who won a couple of grade ones.
Yeah.
And then Structor, who went to the sales, went on to bring over 800,000 at the two-year-old sales.
How did he not get the Eclipse Award, by the way?
You know, I got a few bones to pick with a few friends.
I went through my votes on this program, and I guess I'm one of the few people that actually voted for Structor. I said, if you're going to give Bricks and Mortar Horse of the Year for being a turf horse, I think you have to do the same thing in this wide-open two-year-old category and give it to Structor, who was brilliant.
Brilliant, 3-for-3,
yeah.
You know, did everything, and he beat the best of the Europeans that came over. So, but
I was,
you
shocked.
Know, yeah, it's just, it's one of those things. I was sitting with the owners, at the table, and I think we were hopeful, but, the plan was, he said he'd come back and be a 3-year-old champion instead.
Yeah, I like that attitude. Talking with Doug Cawthon from Three Chimneys here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And, of course, this is Gunrunner Week. I'll tell you what, why don't we do this? Would love to hear from you. There are so many Gunrunner fans out there, so many people in the industry that have gotten to have a firsthand look at some of his babies and to go out to see him at the farm. If you're looking to breed to him, send a mare to him. I know you've been out there to see him. Share your favorite Gunrunner memory with us or your favorite Gunrunner comments. If you have been out to see him and you want to let people know about how good he looks or your thoughts, go ahead and send us those at HRRN on Twitter. What is your favorite Gunrunner moment or your favorite Gunrunner memory? And it can be a post-racing career memory or it can be when he was competing on the racetrack, and there were plenty of good memories that he created for many people when he was doing that. Doug, not just Gunrunner. There are so many other stallions out there that have already started to kind of establish themselves and become prominent. Let's talk about a couple of those. And I guess we can start with Sharp Azteca. Here's a horse that had brilliant speed. Tell me a little bit more about him.
Well, I mean, he really did. I mean, he was consistently fast. He had a -2¼ reg in one of his races. I mean, his times were always fast. He physically is very imposing. Well made, just again a really nice mover. Looking forward to seeing his babies. He was really popular, was very fairly priced at $10,000. I haven't seen one. He had a first foal, but it was in Minnesota. So looking forward to seeing some foals because, again, quite a few Three Chimneys mares went to him. And
Minnesota?
Yeah.
You don't see that very often.
No. But the regional markets are pretty important these days. And it was actually, you know, a Kentucky owner that wanted to have a Minnesota bred. So there's a lot of nice stakes up there. So anyway, I think he's got a lot of potential. And he's got that speed that makes a lot of stallions.
Yeah, and he won the Grade 1 Cigar Mile, and we always say that milers make the best stallions, and he proved that he could be one of the top milers in the sport when he was racing in his era, and I think that goes well for Sharp Azteca. How about Palace Malice? I can remember sitting at Belmont Park and watching him strut his stuff. How good was Palace Malice?
He was pretty amazing. Yeah. You know, Todd still calls him the most versatile horse he ever trained, and obviously one of his best. And talking about milers, I mean, his win in the Met Mile was outstanding. To be able to win a one-turn mile against the best was impressive. He also won going short as a two-year-old at Saratoga, got shins, so he didn't run until later, and then he wins the Belmont. So he was just so versatile, that horse, and he's gotten off to a great start. Obviously, a homebred of Three Chimneys, Structor, being an Eclipse finalist and a Grade 1 winner. He's got several other nice horses out there. Mr. Monomoy looks like he could get up to the Grade 1 level. He was third the other day, consistently getting nice horses. So we're looking forward to seeing more.
Doesn't hurt that he's a son of Curlin, too.
No, never hurts. Never hurts. One of Steve's other great horses.
Yeah, that helps, too. How about Will Take Charge? Tell me a little bit more about him.
Will Take Charge is such a cool horse. Big, gorgeous horse. Was very popular. Fairly priced originally at 30. He's kind of the bargain of the year, I think. He stands for 15. You could actually call Rebecca or Tom at Three Chimneys and get a deal on him.
Yeah.
To be able to breed to a horse like him for under 10,000 is a real opportunity because if you look at his record as a stallion, he has not had a graded winner yet, but he's got six graded runners. He's got three separate stakes horses. And to be able to get that is pretty good for under $10,000. So I'm hoping he was a later developing horse. We're hoping we're going to see some more. But right now, I think he's the bargain of Kentucky.
Yeah, you have him. You have the son of Medaglia d'Oro, Fast Anna, who is also standing at Three Chimneys. Fast Anna, another horse that kind of lived up to his name when he was racing.
He was so fast. I mean, I saw him walk in the paddock of the King's Bishop, and I just was like, wow, you know, that is a physical specimen. And he came into that very, you know, lightly race, had won a couple of races by, you know, the length of the stretch practically down here, and went up there and just got beat a neck, ran a real impressive race, and then got hurt and didn't get to fulfill his potential. But he has a lot of potential, tons of pedigree, and he's already got three stakes winners and a couple of other horses that are knocking on the door. You know, I expect him to have some nice stakes winners and even graded runners in the spring here.
Yeah, you can learn more about all those stallions again at threechimneys.com. Talking with Doug Cawtham from Three Chimneys here on HRN. Doug, you've been around this game for a very long time. You've worked in several different positions. To be associated with an organization like Three Chimneys, for you personally, what's that mean?
It's great because you get to work at the highest level, do matings to the top stallions, and sometimes get creative and, you know, try to breed something from one of the homebred stallions that, you know, like, can we get a Grade 1 winner with Sharp Azteca, etc. We did it with Palace Malice to a homebred. So it's a real challenge and a lot of fun. You get to work with a lot of really talented people, and that's what I like to do. You know, my wife and I run Doug Cawtham Thoroughbred Management, and Three Chimneys is a key component of the work we do. We like working with people, trying to add value to the team and see if we can get to the next level. So it's great working with the Tori Albas and all the people at Three Chimneys. There's too many people there to name, but it's a great collection of quality people with a lot of talent.
Yeah, and you fit right in. You've had so much success everywhere that you've been. The stallion game, let's face it, it's not an easy game. I think people in the industry would tell you it's a very competitive game. What's the key to making a stallion successful?
I think somewhat endurance. You know, you have to stick with it because, you know, unfortunately you will have a failure here and there. But if you stick with it, stick to the game plan, pick quality stallions with the right physicals and the right potential, and breed them to mares and price them right. You know, it's you have to be aware of what the market wants, and you have to react to the market. The market has changed so much, as we were talking about before the show, and not only how you present them, how you market them, and, you know, listen to your customers, because the customer is always right. I've learned that over the years. You know, early in my stallion career, I probably thought I knew more. Some of the best horsemen out there are the breeders that know how to pick their mare, mate their mare to the stallion, and if you just let them do their job and help them along the way, give them a good price, you can have great rewards.
Rebecca Nicholson was a tremendous help from Three Chimneys, getting us all the information we needed to celebrate Gunrunner Week here all week long on HRN. I want to thank Rebecca for all of her help. She was tremendous. She was right on top of it, got everything to us quickly and efficiently, and just she's an all-star, in my opinion.
Rebecca's doing a wonderful job, both as a salesperson, as a marketing director. Tom Hamm is leading the charge on stallion sales with Rebecca. And, you know, you couldn't ask for better talent, nicer people. And, you know, that's what it's about, is relationships. A lot of the horse business is about relationships, and, you know, build them and keep them.
Well, Doug, I'll let you go. I know you got your car parked out here. I don't want it to get towed on
you. Yeah, I'm a little nervous about these event folks.
I do have a bone to pick to you. I usually don't like to have people on the show that have a better radio voice than I do.
Oh, I'm auditioning.
Well, you just passed your first test. Well done, my friend. Thank you for joining me. Appreciate it. Thank you for all your support, too, with Gunrunner Week.
And thanks a lot.
Let's keep it rolling.
It's been fun doing it.
Yeah,
thanks.
Appreciate it. Doug Cawthon here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, visit 3chimneys.com to learn more. Let Doug know you heard him on the radio, because, like I tell you, he's got a better radio voice than me, and it pains me to say that, but great to have him on board. Time now for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, which is brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington. When I come back, I'm going to visit with Jeff Bloom of Bloom Racing, our HRN colleague, who is also now the owner of an Eclipse Award champion. Yeah, you'll hear more about that on the other side of this break. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you by the Lexus Store of Lexington.
Sam Riddle, owner of Man O' War, once made the now famous remark, "Thoroughbreds don't cry." By that, he meant that they had the heart and courage to keep on trying no matter how badly the odds were stacked against them. There are those of which legends are formed, like Black Gold and Dark Secret, both of whom broke a leg during the running of the race but refused to stop running until they crossed the finish line still fighting. Undoubtedly, one of the most memorable tests of heart in the chronicled annals of thoroughbred racing was the two-year-old ongoing duel between two superior colts, Aladar and Affirmed. Both were chestnuts, both schooled by top trainers, and both were members of the same outstanding Raisa native family. In toto, they both typified all that was poignantly majestic about the thoroughbred breed itself. Affirmed was a good little horse, standing at 15.3 hands, that's about 5 feet 1 inch, and Aladar was a good big horse, standing at 16.2 hands, about 5 feet 4 inches. You know, there's an old racing adage to the effect that a good big horse will beat a good small horse. Those who echoed that well-known refrain forgot one simple thing. Affirmed was a fanatic. Once he got to the lead, he absolutely refused to let another horse get by him. The fact was that Aladar was also a fanatic, and that he refused to stop trying to pass, no matter how consistently Affirmed defeated him. In their first six meetings, Affirmed had whipped Aladar four times. But when they went post beneath the hallowed twin spires of Churchill Downs in the lengthening late afternoon shadows of an early May afternoon in the run for the Roses, Aladar was the crowd betting favorite. One of the fascinating aspects of the Affirmed Aladar battles was the difference in their respective running styles. Affirmed was a quick breaker and, once in front, flatly refused to relinquish his advantage. Aladar was a relatively slow breaker who came from off the pace to make one big run. That 1978 Kentucky Derby showcased those patterns and tendencies most graphically indeed. Although Aladar chased Affirmed valiantly, the Little Harbor View colt won the race over the Game Calumet colt, which thereby upped the composite log to Affirmed 5 wins, Aladar 2. It turned out to be a case of equine deja vu in the run for the Black-Eyed Susans at Pimlico 2 weeks later. This time, the big horse made an even more determined run for the lead and was defeated by a bare neck. Laz Barrera, a firm's trainer, said that even if they had gone around again, Aladar would never have caught him. There were not many others, including Aladar himself, who bought into Barrera's absolute vote of confidence. The Calumet colt went postward as the favorite in the ultimate test, the mile-and-a-half run for the Carnations, the Belmont Stakes. And there was a solid faction of knowing horsemen who were of the opinion Aladar had been whipped by a firm so many times, 6 out of 8, that in effect, a firm had broken Aladar's heart, as it were, and that the race would be a walkover for affirmed. The 111th Belmont will be long remembered by Ogden Phipps, then president of the New York Racing Association, and everybody else who saw it as well as, quote, the greatest horse race I've ever seen, unquote. I was a witness, but I must frankly say the match race between Al Sab and Whirlaway at Narragansett in 1942 was better. So be it. Nevertheless, a firm got away from the barrier with his customary quick start and then dropped into second place just off the pace, lying in wait like a tiger ready to pounce on his prey. Aladar broke in rather leisurely fashion and came from further back to challenge on the outside. With the indomitable spirit of a truly great horse, he began his ambitious assault on affirmed in spite of his recent defeats at the hands of the latter, defeats that would have made any lesser thoroughbred stop trying. Speeding rapidly to the head of the field, Assumed and Aladar came to the 3/8 pole eyeball to eyeball. Matching each other with stride for magnificent stride, they had covered the first mile in 1:37.2. Muscles strained to the bursting point, neither magnificent colt giving an inch. Their strides were in perfect synchronization with the respective riders in fluid motion as they pounded down the long Belmont stretch in what was truly poetry in motion. Then Aladar, in the moment everybody had waited for, stuck his nose out for just a mere fraction of an inch further than affirmed. It seemed just for an instant that Aladar's long battle had finally been won. The prolonged intensity of that duel for the lead and the assertive move would well have given cause for most other horses to back off and settle for a most respectable second place. For a fleeting moment, it looked as if affirmed would tire and slow down. But he reached down into the depths for that X-plus, that little something extra that only the great ones have, that which makes a thoroughbred a true champion. In one singularly bold display of the ultimate in courage, the little horse with the enormous heart gathered every ounce of power that was within him and thrust his nose a good 3 inches past that of Aladar. And that's the way it stayed as they hit the finish line. To this very day, the question is hotly debated. Which horse had more heart, the one who would not be beaten or the one who kept being beaten but came back for each successive confrontation trying harder and harder to win? You see, Aladar didn't know how to cry, and in that context, he exemplified the consummate thoroughbred. But history shows, and the fact remains, it was affirmed that it had that intangible something extra, that X-plus. As Laz Barrera phrased it when, the following summer, the good little Triple Crown winner thundered home under an impost of 132 pounds to win the Hollywood Gold Cup and become the first thoroughbred to earn $2 million, quote, affirmed is like my father. When you ask him for a quarter to go to the movies, he'd have to search all of his pockets, but you knew he'd find one somewhere, unquote. And by the way, there's a great sports trivia question emanating from that 1978 Triple Crown. Who was the only horse ever to run second in all three Triple Crown races? It was Aladar. No, indeed, thoroughbreds do not cry.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation is a top 10 third crop sire by earnings, black type winners, and graded stakes winners. With nearly $7 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by six black type horses in 2019. From a second crop, three-year-old daughter Serengeti Empress won the 2019 Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks and was runner-up in both the Grade 1 Test and Acorn Stakes. Serengeti Empress finished the year with a strong third to older mares in the Breeders' Cup Distaff and is a finalist for Eclipse Champion three-year-old filly. By Distorted Humor, millionaire graded stakes winner Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Grade 1 winning millionaire Preservationist. The exceptionally talented son of Arch boasts Foundation mares Courtly D and Manad on the top and bottom of his blue-blooded pedigree. On the racetrack, he was one of 2019's best, taking the Grade 1 Woodward at Saratoga and Historic Suburban at Belmont Park.
And Preservationist has won the Suburban by 4.5 lengths over Catholic Boy and Pebble.
Preservationist, another exciting addition to the Airdrie Stud Stallion roster. Think about it.
Gunrunner, the leading earner, best son, and heir to the Great Candy Ride. Out of the Grade 2 winning half-sister to Horse of the Year St. Liam, and a six-time Grade 1 winner with earnings of nearly $16 million.
Gunrunner is going to get his Grade 1, winning the Clark by 3 lengths.
Gunrunner, very impressive in the Woodward.
And Gunrunner with gusto in the Stephen Foster.
Gunrunner wins the Whitney.
Gunrunner's on top of the world. He wins the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Gunrunner with an unforgettable performance in the Pegasus World Cup.
Gunrunner, standing at Three Chimneys.
This is Joe Rocco Jr.
I'm John Velasquez.
My name is Victor Espinosa.
This is jockey Brian Hernandez, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Midnight Bizou is fifth. She's moving now. And the lead is two as they make their way to the top of the stretch. And now Elite makes her move for the lead. And Midnight Bizou comes blasting on the outside after her. These two will turn for home together. Coach Rocks has faded to third. She's a Julian Wildcat on the inside. They're into the stretch. And it's Elite to catch. Midnight Bizou, her fearsome foe, comes at her on the outside, and these two lay it on the line with a 16th to go. A late on the inside, Midnight Bizou on the outside. They're coming to the wire. Who's it gonna be? Oh, it's so close. It's so close. Was it Midnight Bizou or was it a late? They were inseparable on the wire.
Yeah, welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence. That was the incomparable Larry Colmus with the call of the personal incident at Saratoga last year. He went right to the hospital afterwards and had hernia surgery. Pretty pumped up for that performance, and rightfully so. Midnight Bizou, the champion older female from 2019. She received that honor Thursday night here at Gulfstream Park, and it's a privilege now to be joined by her owner, my good friend, our colleague here on the network, Jeff Bloom, Bloom Racing. Jeff, congratulations, man. I've been wanting to do this interview with you for a very long time. We finally get to do it. Congrats.
Thank you, my friend. It feels good to be here and to get those goosebumps listening to Larry and his ha-ha-ha at the end.
It was great. He was so pumped up, right?
What a call. And you, the emotion in his call. And you know, a lot of times when I'm watching a race like that, I'm not necessarily paying attention to the announcer because I'm so in the race. But every single word and moment that happened and occurred during the course of that call by Larry, I heard up until the finish. So that you know, to this day, it's forever going to be one of the most thrilling moments.
Midnight Bizou won seven greatest stakes in 2019. Three of those were grade ones, including that personal ensign. I know that was your probably top Midnight Bisou moment throughout last year. That race, to me, was kind of the epitome of everything that she embodied last year, because of the fact that I think it's well documented she doesn't really care for Saratoga, probably not her favorite racing surface, and she's able to run down a fellow Eclipse Award finalist in Elate, and it was all heart, reminiscent of a horse like Personal Ensign in the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, and also we're talking about, you know, a conversation where the distance certainly going to favor Elate in that situation, you know, there were some good fillies in there where not everything went Midnight Bisou's way, and when Elate looked like she was going to sneak away, I thought, okay, this is a track that's going to be hard for Midnight Bisou to overcome and be able to tackle Elate. And then to have the stretch drive that they had and to have Money Mike, you know, get that nose down just at the right time, as he's done so many times. And, you know, he's always said to me about Midnight Bisou, Jeff, all I have to do is point her to the wire. She knows where the wire is. She knows how to get to the wire. And if too many things don't go wrong, she's going to find that wire first. She has that drive, that determination, that heart, and that desire. But as a race fan, Steve Asmussen and I had talked about after the dust settled and we had some time to reflect, it's such a fun race to look back on and watch and appreciate and enjoy as a fan, to have that kind of battle between two very accomplished horses down to the wire like that.
As you're sitting there on Thursday evening and they put the three finalists up, Blue Prize, Elate, and Midnight Bisou, and you're waiting for the envelope to be opened to hear your name called, what was that like?
Hurry up and open the envelope.
Get this over with.
Look, you know, the whole lead up to this situation, everything about it is surreal. And then sitting there and you're waiting throughout the night, and it's, you know, it's a fun night and it's festive and all these great accomplishments, you know, prior to the announcement of our award. And you just want it to get there, but at the same time, you want to enjoy every little bit of it. And when they did open the envelope and announced her name, I just had to stop for, it seemed like a long time. It was probably a split second, and think about what this filly has done for myself, my family, my partners, my friends, all we've been through throughout the years. And in that split second of a moment, all of that reflection happened. And I can tell you that walk from the table to the stage, Mike, was like floating on air. I don't even remember any of the steps. I just remember being at my table and then being up on the stage.
This game is incredible. You think back to November, you and I sat down at Santa Anita before the Breeders' Cup. We talked about her in the distaff. We talked about the potential that if she won that race, she could be Horse of the Year. Forget about champion older female, but she could be Horse of the Year. As we know, she came up short against Blue Prize. I know you were a bit dejected after that race. You thought she should get there. You thought she was going to win. And then you come here now and she's the champion. Lowest lows, highest highs. I'm sure there have been lower lows, but you get beat in the distaff. What was that like? I mean, was that tough for you?
It was, you know, I got to tell you, Mike, it was mostly tough for me in regards to the filly. She, you know, look, Blue Prize, very accomplished horse. And, you know, look, she's a deserving winner. But Midnight Bisou just had so much to overcome in the way that the race played out. And it was, you know, it's, look, those things are frustrating. We got beat. It happens. It would have been spectacular to have an 8-for-8 season, to show up to every dance. That would have been 4 grade 1 wins in 1 year, 8 graded stake wins in 1 year at multiple racetracks, the best of the best. And, you know, you feel like if you had another couple jumps, she gets there and all of that. But and then, you know, when some time goes by, you go, look what happened and how fortunate are we? What are you going to do? You can't win them all, I guess, right? And it was tough, but you get over it and you move on.
The other thing we talked about in that interview was the fact that you were going to have to say goodbye to her because she was scheduled to be sold at the Fasic Tipton sale. I had to go back and edit that part of the interview out. Thank you very much for that, because after we did the interview, you announced, no, we're not going to sell her. She's going to stay in training here in 2020. She's pointing now for the Saudi Cup next month. What led to that decision?
So when we did that interview, she was selling, you know, and I will tell you that there was a moment on the evening prior to the race on Saturday, the Breeders' Cup, where we got together, me and the team, and she said, what are we doing? You know, why is it that we're selling following this race? She's only 4. We enjoy everything about being around her and the racing. She's healthy. She's sound. She loves what she's doing. And it wasn't like there was this long, thought-out analysis of the situation and, you know, one-line pros, one-line cons. It was, we just said, this is crazy. We've worked so hard to be in this situation. We're not going to sell. And it was just in that moment where I said, forget it. And I wanted to make sure that we made that decision prior to her running. The decision for her not to sell had nothing to do whatsoever in the outcome of the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, yeah, it was made before the race.
Yeah, exactly. And so once we made that decision, I can tell you that the following day was so much more enjoyable, and it has been ever since.
How about the Saudi Cup? Where did that idea come from that you said, okay, we're going to start her campaign against the boys in the Saudi Cup?
$20 million.
When did you become interested in the money? It's for the love of the
game.
You
know how we say it's not about the money? Sometimes it's about the money.
$20 million, yeah.
So, you know, Steve and I, you know, during the Breeders' Cup, of course, and once it was decided that we were going to go ahead and keep her, we had a rushed conversation, and knowing that the $20 million opportunity was out there, it's like, well, this is great. We're not selling her now. There's this big race in Saudi Arabia, you know, the world's richest race in the history of racing. Looks like a good place to begin her campaign for 2020.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I can't wait to watch your strutter stuff over there. And you looking forward to Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, it's an adventure, and we love racing on an international stage, and you know, those kinds of opportunities are few and far between, and we certainly feel as though we have the right competitor, you know, for that particular situation.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of excitement, and we're looking forward to it.
She wasn't the only stable star in 2019. You're wearing a Henley's Joy cap. He's a Grade One winner for you. He's going to be going this afternoon in the Pegasus World Cup Turf. Man, I mean, what a year for you in 2019, and Henley's Joy just stepped up and ran huge that day.
Whirlwind year for
yeah.
us. You know, we really, it went by so fast because we were constantly going to a new and exciting situation with these horses that give us everything. And so Henley's Joy, Snapper Sinclair, some of the younger horses, it's just been an incredibly fun, exciting, and fortunate year for us. And you know, we're off to a pretty good start this year with a couple of Majestic City, our stallion. He's had a couple of winners for us, Homebred just the other day. So we hope we can keep it going. That's what you do. You go out there, you work hard, and you hope you get lucky.
Yeah, your success that you've had in a very short period of time in this game, Jeff, is just remarkable. And I've watched you kind of build this business, Bloom Racing, and get to this level now. And I know how hard you work. You're traveling to sales all over the country. You're going to see horses on the farms. This is not something that just happens. You work your tail off to make it come together. If somebody's looking to get into this business and they want to own horses, what advice do you give to them?
Well, I appreciate that, Mike. And I think, you know, look, when I started out learning to ride, the guy that taught me to be a jockey really instilled in me a proper work ethic and a certain level of integrity in terms of how you apply yourself to your tasks, whether you're raking the barn area, whether you're brushing a horse, whether you're riding the horse. And so I think for me, what's really afforded me the opportunity to be successful, the hard work's important, but it's also learning from the ground up. And really, I've been in this game my whole life, and I started out at the bottom. I started out cleaning stalls. I started out learning about the horse from top to bottom and bottom to top and side to side before I really got into the different aspects of the industry. And I think that's really what's helped me in the long run. So for somebody wanting to get into this great game, regardless of whether it's on the front side, the back side, it starts with the horse. At least it did for me. And that's really what has made put me in a situation to where I could be successful.
Didn't you win the Manitoba Derby when you were riding races?
So it took you, like, what, 15 minutes to get to that? What the heck?
Didn't you beat Angel Cordero Jr.?
Not in the Manitoba Derby, but I did beat him in one horse race. That don't worry,
Angel Cordero Day.
Yeah, it was on Angel Cordero Day, and believe me, how many years ago was that? 25 years ago, 30
yeah.
years ago? And he's so sick of having to hear me say that because it's the only race I ever beat him. But see, you're leaving out the Sandown Derby as well. That was over there on Vancouver Island. I think the purse, which was the biggest race on the island, I want to say when I won it, was $2,500. But nonetheless, a two-time Derby winner.
How did that compare with sitting there and hearing your name called for champion older female?
Well, nothing comes close to winning the Sandown Derby, Mike, but...
Jeff Bloom, Bloom Racing Stable here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Brother, I know you've got a busy day. All the best with Henley's Joy here. Safe travels to Saudi Arabia, and all the best with Midnight Bisou here in 2020, and all the runners in your stable, man. Let's keep it rolling.
Well, first of all, congratulations to you guys on a worthy and deserving Eclipse Award this past season as well. Your second one, and I'm sure there's going to be many more. Love hanging out with you guys, and appreciate all the support.
Thanks, man. Happy to have you part of the team, too. You're back with us for the Triple Crown this year?
I'll be there.
Yeah, Derby, Preakness, Belmont
will
be there.
I will be there.
Partnership with NBC Sports and Westwood One, and Bloom will be with me. Kurt Becker will be there. Tom Leach will be there. We'll have the whole crew put together again. Should be a lot of fun.
Looking forward to it.
Be good. Good luck today, pal.
Thanks so much.
All right, Jeff Bloom here on HRRN. When I come back, your Industry Star of the Week presented by Stuart Morris. Still to come, you're going to hear from trainer Chad Brown. You're going to hear from Chris Griffin at Sam Houston and Lonnie Powell from the FTBOA. Stay with me. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Power.
Caraconte has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconte winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconte and O'Dor! Caraconte!
Gainsway stallion Caraconte, a three-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 132 and 4/5, recording a 114 buyer speed figure. From the top Niarchos female family, his third dam is the hugely influential champion, Miesque. Caraconte was a precocious Group 1 winner as a two-year-old and has already sired three first crop stakes winners and two additional stakes place two-year-olds, including Kenzai Warrior. The Group 3 winner remains undefeated in three starts in England. And Caraconte has commercial appeal, with two-year-olds having sold to major stables for $150,000, $365,000, and $460,000. Caraconte has the performance, pedigree, and physical, and stands value priced at $10,000 at Gainsway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
And they're moving for the eighth pole. It is Bolera down at the rail, and Lucky Move on the outside. And now another broad is coming on out in the middle of the track with a 16th to the finish. Bolera digs down at the rail. Lucky Move on the outside. Another broad in third. They come for the finish, and Bolera has won the 149th. Ladies handicap.
Bolera, the daughter of Darley stallion Bernardini, once again proved best in a stakes race. This time, it was the ladies handicap at Aqueduct last Sunday. And that victory makes Bolera your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley stallion Bernardini is the sire of 21 greatest stakes winners on dirt since 2015. Only Tappet and Curlin have more. Learn more about Bernardini and all the Darley stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Al Stahl, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And Omaha Beach has gone right on by without being asked to do so. Omaha Beach is the new leader in the run, Happy Malibu. And Mike Smith is just sitting still. Manny was second. Complexity back to third. Roadster running on late. They're at the top of the stretch, and Omaha Beach, Manny Wah putting in a stellar effort along the inside. Roadster finishing nicely as well. But it's all about Omaha Beach as they come to the 16th pole. What a classy individual Omaha Beach is. And he is going to gallop home at Santa Anita Park. Salutes the living legend, Mike Smith, the all-time leader in Grade 1 victories. Roadster was second. Manny Wah finished third.
Frank Miramati with the call of the Grade 1 Malibu at Santa Anita back on December 28th. Omaha Beach just strolling the park that afternoon, as it was so many times in his brilliant career. He won 5 of 10 lifetime starts. He was never off the board in any of those 10 starts, and he earned more than $1.6 million. But you get the sense that that was just scratching the surface for Omaha Beach. We never got to see the real Omaha Beach and how good he could really be, because he was always dealing with these little nagging issues that kept him out of some of the biggest races, including the Kentucky Derby, where he was the morning line favorite, and this afternoon's Pegasus World Cup, where it was announced Thursday that he would have to scratch from this race as well. He's off to Spendthrift Farm to be a stallion. And, you know, when you think about the people associated with any horse in this sport, not just a horse like Omaha Beach, but right down to the horse competing in the lowest level claiming race that we have, it takes a village to get that horse to the races and to care for that horse. And so often, the people that work with them the most don't get the most recognition. And I'm talking about people like the exercise riders and the grooms. And earlier this week, our Bobby Newman had a chance to stop by the Mandela Barn, and he talked with Omaha Beach's groom. He goes by the name of Jose Barrera, and he is this week's Industry Star of the Week, the segment presented by Stuart Morris. Here it is, Jose Barrera, the groom of Omaha Beach.
Speaking here with groom Jose Barrera, he is our Industry Star of the Week, and he's also in town with Omaha Beach. He is the groom for Omaha Beach. Jose, what's it like when there's a superstar like Omaha Beach in the barn, and you're the person taking care of him daily?
Oh, it's what is that, God? It's a very important to me, but you got to take care of really good horses, so that's why.
Is there any big difference taking care of Omaha Beach when you're traveling for a big race as opposed to just having it at home in Southern California?
Yes, it is. A lot of different, though. I mean, you have to be, when you fly with them by yourself, you have to be careful with everything for him.
What are the big differences here in the being stabled here and being kind of by yourself instead of being at home with the big barn and the rest of the team?
Well, because I'm here with myself only. And over there at the barn, everybody's keeping an eye, the boss and the assistant and whatever.
How has everything been here since you shipped to Gulfstream for the last week and a half or so for both you and the horse?
Good. Everything's good, too. Everything's fine with them. And, well, I try to keep them good, though.
Lastly, the Pegasus is supposed to be the last race for Omaha Beach. Have you thought what it'll be like when you have to say goodbye to him?
Well, I don't know. It's a good question, though. It's a nice horse, and we work with him. It's very comfortable with him. So I'm going to miss him. That's right.
Well, Jose, we certainly wish you, the entire team in Omaha Beach, the best of luck in the Pegasus. Thank you so much, and thanks for being the Industry Star of the Week.
Nice to meet you. Thank you very much.
Well, again, that interview was conducted about 2 hours prior to the announcement that Omaha Beach would not go to the post in the Pegasus World Cup this afternoon. And, yeah, Jose Barrera, a very deserving winner of our Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Stuart, remember, he offers a boutique, full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his entire team. His success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. All you have to do is visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the major sales coming up again here in 2020. Don't forget that Jose Barrera, Jeff Bloom, and Doug Cawthon, who joined me earlier in the first half of the show, are all going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. That's one thing I'm really passionate about, and I guess it, you know, really fueled that passion inside of me when I had a chance to be one of the judges for the industry awards with Darley this past year. And that's a great program. It's a great award that Sheikh Mohammed has come up with, where they get a chance to honor the people that work behind the scenes, the grooms and the hot walkers and all of the people, the exercise riders, everybody that makes this sport a success that doesn't often get recognition. You have people in the starting gate crews who you don't hear from very often. You have outriders who we don't hear from very often. Without them, we don't have a sport. And I love opportunities like that where we can recognize somebody like Jose Barrera. And again, my thanks to Bobby Newman for stopping by for that interview. In the second half of the program, you're going to hear Bobby's interview with champion trainer Chad Brown as he looks back on the Horse of the Year season for Bricks and Mortar. He looks back on his big night at the Eclipse Awards, and he talks about his three contenders going postward in this afternoon's Pegasus World Cup Turf. That interview coming up in just a little bit. You're going to hear from Mike Welsh of the Daily Racing Forum. That interview coming your way in just a minute or two after we transition into the second half of the show. And Chris Griffin from Sam Houston will talk about their huge program here this weekend. I'll talk to Chris at 9:20, and then Lonnie Powell from the FTBOA will be with me at 9:40 Eastern Time. So a lot to get to in the second half of the show. We'll kick it off next right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Victory Gallop is still third, but he's coming real quiet. Is a bit leg weary. Victory Gallop is trying. Here's the line. Real Quiet wins the 124th running of the Kentucky Derby.
This is unbelievable. Zenyatta, what a performance. One we'll never forget. Looked impossible.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
On the inside, on a cottage board. On the outside, solo.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, live from Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, on a gorgeous morning. Temperatures now into the lower 70s. You look overhead, and it's just powder blue skies, and that sun has now risen in the east, which is over to my right. That's past the finish line around that first turn. And gorgeous emerald green turf course. You have the fast main track. It's going to be a huge afternoon of racing in South Florida. The Pegasus World Cup, the Pegasus World Cup Turf, all coming up later this afternoon. Our exclusive radio coverage here on the network begins at 4 o'clock Eastern. You can join myself and Bobby Newman and Dan Mason as we bring you coverage 4 to 6 Eastern Time right here on Sirius 219 XM 201. And if you can't be in front of a radio, all you have to do is stream us on your phone or your mobile device. You can do that through our website at horseracingradio.net. And that coverage this afternoon presented by Red Brand Fence and the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. I told you at the top of the show, talked about it a couple of times in the first half of the program, Omaha Beach, the big news, being scratched from the Pegasus this year with that fetlock issue. That was announced on Thursday morning. Prior to that being announced, the horse that beat him in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, Spun to Run, was also scratched. And I was really looking forward to seeing that rematch. Spun to Run is a horse that has a lot of talent. Maybe not as much as Omaha Beach, but we don't know. He beat him on the square at Santa Anita. Whole different ballgame here at Gulfstream, but unfortunately we won't get to figure that out. Omaha Beach, now retired to Spendthrift Farm. Spun to Run will continue to race here in 2020, and we'll see him once he gets over that skin infection that caused him to be scratched on Thursday. Again, Mike Welsh of the Daily Racing Forum going to join me here in just a couple of moments. Looking forward to that interview. Chad Brown got a chance to catch up with Bobby Newman earlier this week and hear from him. As a matter of fact, let's do this. While we wait for Mike, let's not waste any time. Let's get you right to that Chad Brown interview. Chad caught up at Palm Meadows with Bobby Newman yesterday morning, and here's what Chad had to say.
talking with trainer Chad Brown, now four-time defending champion, if you will, as far as Eclipse Awards goes. Trainer Chad Brown also got Horse of the Year honors with Bricks and Mortar in the Eclipse Awards on Thursday night. Chad, first of all, congratulations. What does it mean to you and your team when you win the Eclipse Award as the trainer and also have the Horse of the Year?
No, it's just a real remarkable year. And so thankful that we had a lot of great horses to work with, like Bricks and Mortar. And you know, so proud of my team. They put in so many hours and so much hard work, and they're so talented. For them to accomplish what they have together is really remarkable.
Looking back at this time last year, Bricks and Mortar was making a second start off a long layoff coming into the Pegasus. He had won an allowance race, was trying both grade one competition and a yielding turf for the first time in the Pegasus turf. What do you remember about that day and your thoughts leading up to that race in particular?
Well, he was training particularly well, and we were eager to get him back into high-level races. We thought a lot of him as a three-year-old, and unfortunately got injured. I wasn't too worried about the level of competition. I knew he was up to it. The weather conditions are a different story. He really hadn't had any experience on really soft turf before, so I was a little nervous going into the race if he was going to handle it, and he sure did, and he proved throughout the season he could handle any type of ground. Excuse me.
You've got three chances in this year's Pegasus World Cup turf: Sacred Life, Instilled Regard, and Without Parole. Beginning with Sacred Life, he didn't have the cleanest trip in his last start, but he still closed well in the stretch. How's he enjoyed the new surroundings here in Florida, and what kind of trip does he need to really fire his best shot?
You know, he's got a challenging post out towards the outside. I think he's probably just going to have to drop in off the first turn and try to save a little ground and work his way up and get in some sort of striking position by the time they turn for home. He has a really strong turn of foot. He's a rapidly improving horse, and I feel he's good enough to win if he gets the right trip.
Instilled Regard is very versatile. He can run on the dirt. He can run very well on the turf. We saw him winning last time in the Grade 2 Fort Lauderdale. Doesn't look like there's a lot of speed in this field, if any. Could we see him on the lead and maybe trying to wire the field?
I'd say that's unlikely, but I would like to see him very forwardly placed, and hopefully he can work out another good trip. He got a really good trip last time. He's going to need to do that again.
Without Parole was very impressive, finishing third in the Breeders' Cup mile last out, but he's actually never won at a distance longer than a mile. How does the mile and 3/16 suit him?
You know, I think he's looking for more distance, this horse. I really do. He trains that way. And, you know, he has that race under his belt now at the Breeders' Cup, and he's had a little freshening since then, but he seems to be very fit. I love the way he's training, and he's got a good post.
All four of his lifetime wins were when he was ridden by Frankie Dettori. How did the horse and jockey get reunited for this race?
Well, I read one on Instilled Regard, the local prep, and so it was natural to leave him on the horse that is coming off a win, even though Without Pro ran incredibly well in the Breeders' Cup, and I read gave him a beautiful ride. So seeing that he's on the horse that won the last prep, we just circled back to someone that knew him, Frankie, and he had been reaching out to me wanting to ride the horse, which is always nice to hear, and I'm happy to have him back together.
Four-time Eclipse Award champion trainer Chad Brown, now with the 2019 Horse of the Year Bricks and Mortar. He's got three chances in this year's edition of the Pegasus World Cup Turf. Chad, best of luck.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is Bobby Newman with Chad Brown, and yeah, what a night for Chad Brown here on Thursday at Gulfstream Park, being honored as the champion trainer, and then Bricks and Mortar winning Horse of the Year. It was the whole night. It just seemed like Chad and the team just kept coming up to accept the accolades and the awards. The Klarovich Stables, you know, obviously the owners having a big night too. It, you know, just incredible. To see that kind of success from one team. And our congratulations to them, and our thanks to Chad for taking the time. Chad Brown's three horses, it's kind of unusual, and I think we could even say now, considering the domination that Chad has had over the past several years, kind of unusual to look at a major turf race and not see a Chad Brown-trained horse as the favorite. You don't have that in the World Cup turf this afternoon. He just walked through each of his three contenders with Bobby. Without parole, the most highly regarded of the three, at 4-1, second choice, but he's not the favorite. He has Instilled Regard, who is 10-1, and Sacred Life, 12-1 on the morning line. And I mentioned earlier, the favorite in the Pegasus World Cup turf is Irish bred Magic Wand, 7-2 for Aiden O'Brien, Ryan Moore, and the folks at Coolmore. Somewhat surprising. Not surprising that Magic Wand would end up being the morning line favorite. Magic Wand ran very well in this race last year. A lady taking on the boys. She ran very well to finish behind Bricks and Mortar. And that's why she returns here this year. You know she likes the turf course. You know she can handle the ship. You know at that point she was making her first start against boys in the Pegasus World Cup turf last year. She has raced almost exclusively with the males in Australia, in Hong Kong, and in Ireland throughout the second half of 2019. And when I say she was second behind Bricks and Mortar last year, she was second by 3/4 of a length to the eventual horse of the year. So Magic Wand, a very deserved favorite. But it just, because of the domination that Chad has had on this sport in recent years, you look up at a turf race and you see Chad Brown and you say, okay, his horse has to be the favorite. Well, not the case on the morning line anyway. May Go Postward is the favorite, but not the case on the morning line for Chad and his three runners coming up this afternoon in the Pegasus World Cup turf. Nobody knows Gulfstream Racing better than Mike Welsh from the Daily Racing Form. He covers Gulfstream Park in South Florida for DRF and does it extremely well. And he's with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network to share his thoughts on this Pegasus World Cup and the World Cup turf. Mike, first of all, good morning, my friend.
Good morning.
Thanks for spending a little time. And, yeah, you think about this year's World Cup. I guess we'll start there, even though I was just talking about the turf. But you think about the World Cup, and I've said throughout the program that it's really probably more about who's not going to race than it is about who is going to race. Do you agree?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the case. I mean, starting with the competition from the Saudi race and the Dubai race now, the drop in the purse here from 9-3, so already we were losing a couple of the big players in Maximum Security and McKenzie, and then to have what happened here a couple of days ago, losing the two morning line favorites. I mean, that might be unprecedented. I mean, I've seen a lot of races where occasions where, you know, the favorite scratches for one reason or another leading up to a race, but to have the favorite and the second choice go out within 2 hours of each other, I'm not sure that's ever happened before. But, you know, it kind of makes the race a little bit anticlimactic now. I mean, still a good group left, but certainly nowhere near what a few months ago probably hoping to have attracted here for this race.
Yeah, I've spent some time with Richard Mandela over the years, probably not nearly as much as you have, and I couldn't help but feel for Richard to have to go through this again after doing it last year before the Kentucky Derby with Omaha Beach.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I mean, probably losing him before the Derby, a bigger blow, even though the money wasn't the same. It's the Derby, you know, so really can't ever replace something like that. But, yeah, to have it happen 2 times in a row and before the horse's final start, you know, at least he was going to have a chance to go out on a blazing note with a couple of grade one sprint wins, and then if he could have won this race too. But, you know, that's what, horse racing's a tough business, and you really have to be prepared for the worst as well as for the best.
Well, we're left with a wide-open 10-horse field now, and I guess maybe, well, I would say definitely a better betting race now than it would have been had Omaha Beach stayed in, unless you didn't like Omaha Beach and you were going to play against them. But now you've got 10 horses that are all pretty evenly matched. Who goes Postward as the favorite now, and who are some of the horses you'll be looking to run big later today, Mike?
Well, I think Higher Power will probably be the favorite now, and I was actually going to take a shot with him over Omaha Beach just for the value. I mean, look, Omaha Beach certainly on paper appeared to be the best horse going in, but there were some question marks there as far as, you know, stretching him back out to a mile and an eighth, and, you know, with the problem he had earlier in the week with the foot, or a couple of weeks ago with the foot, and the other speed in the race. He could have been a little bit vulnerable at 6-5, but higher power now will not be a value play. He's going to be the favorite, but I just like the way he seems to be coming into the race, watching the tapes of his races and the reports I got from my clocker, Toby Terrell out in California. He seems to have cycled back to peak form off those workouts. He's coming in off of 3 grade one races, so you know, you pretty much the class of the field in that regard as well. So all being equal, I just like think Harry Power is the horse to beat now.
Yeah, and unfortunately, because of the defections, it really means that the race preceding the Pegasus World Cup, the turf, probably overshadows its dirt counterpart. That race, really competitive. It has been since entries were taken on Wednesday. 12 horses will go to the post. I mentioned Chad Brown has 3, but not the favorite. The morning line favorite is Magic Wand, 7-2, who was second last year behind eventual horse of the year, Bricks and Mortar, in this same race. How'd you see the turf, Mike?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who actually does go post with the favorite. The fact that Magic Wand now drew post position 12 may temper the enthusiasm for her among some of her supporters. And, you know, and she's been close several times in the States without still having come away with a win here, being that, you know, although obviously a great second behind Bricks and Mortar in the Arlington Million, and second here last year also to Bricks and Mortar. So off those two races, I mean, she certainly deserves the most attention, I guess. And Chad Brown, having 3 of them, it might split the support a little bit at the windows amongst all 3. The one advantage that Chad may have here, and Magic Wand as well, is they are proven commodities without Lasix. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have discussed, you know, that factor here in these two races. You've got horses that primarily throughout their entire careers have run on Lasix. Now they're running without Lasix today. You just don't know how it's going to affect their performances. Some it may not bother at all. Some it may bother a lot, and others may be in the middle there. It's just hard to predict. It's a handicapping factor in these two races that we really have no way of knowing. I mean, you could watch workouts, and you could watch horses run, and you can see their figures, and you can figure things out that way. But there's really no indication at all on any of these horses, save maybe for the ones that have already, you know, proven themselves without Lasix, like Sacred Life, like Without Parole, and like Magic Wand. So, and it's, even Chad admitted that might be a bit of an edge for him. But so I like the two Chads, Without Parole and Sacred Life. But I picked the price at a big horse at a big price in here. I went to Zulu Alpha. I mean, this horse always seems to show up. He's been training spectacularly. I think he's done nothing wrong. He works on the main track, even though he runs on the turf. He's looked terrific to me. He looked great galloping over the track again yesterday. And he's going to be a big price. So if Tyler can work out a pretty good trip from mid-pack or maybe a little beyond since he's turning back in distance a little bit, I just thought he was worth taking a look at. And what is, you could probably go 6 deep in here and not hit it, you know, the way this race plays out.
Talking with Mike Welsh of the Daily Racing Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, talking about the Pegasus World Cup and the World Cup turf. Mike, I'm glad you bring up the medication side of things, because that's been, for a long time now, a hot-button topic in the sport. There are people on both sides of that argument. Have you had the chance to visit with any of the horsemen outside of a guy like Chad, who said maybe that does give him a slight advantage? Have you had a chance to gauge their temperature on whether they like this move by the Stronach group to race medication-free in these two races?
You know, I haven't asked them specifically on their opinion in the general nature of this move. I mean, I've asked them specifically regarding their horses. I talked to Brad Cox regarding Arklow, and, you know, he seems a tiny bit concerned. He calls it, you know, the wild card factor in the race, which we would just pretty much alluding to. He told me he worked Arklow a couple of times without Lasix just to see how that went, and he said, you know, so far so good, but a work isn't a race. So he for one, you know, may have a little bit of a question mark how his horse is going to do. I talked to Todd Pletcher, Channel Cat. He said he did not seem concerned at all, no worries there. So I think the opinions will be split, and it probably depends on your individual horse. You know, trainers know which ones may have a propensity to bleed a little bit and which ones don't. War Story is one that has had a little history of bleeding. I know in the classic, So they're a little bit nervous about this. They worked them, I think, once or twice without Lasix just to see how that would go. And so did the Spun to Run team. Of course, that's a moot point now, but I know they were a bit concerned as well and tried working him in the morning without Lasix just to make sure that there was no issue there. So I think, you know, for the most part, it's just a question that no horseman can really answer 100% when you're dealing with horses that for their entire careers have run every single race exclusively with Lasix.
Well, when it comes to covering this sport, he's as good as it gets. He is Mike Welsh from the Daily Racing Form here on HRRN. And like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send him a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Mike, appreciate the visit and enjoy Pegasus World Cup Day, my friend. We'll see you out here.
My pleasure. Have a great day, guys.
All right. Mike Welsh here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Coming up next, we'll turn our attention southward to Sam Houston and talk about their huge program coming up, including that Houston Ladies Classic. I'll be joined by Chris Griffin to do that next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Gunrunner, the leading earner, best son, and heir to the Great Candy Ride. Out of the Grade 2 winning half-sister to Horse of the Year St. Liam, and a six-time Grade 1 winner with earnings of nearly $16 million.
Gunrunner is going to get his Grade 1, winning the Clark by three lengths.
Gunrunner, very impressive in the Woodward.
And Gunrunner with gusto in the Stephen Foster.
Gunrunner wins the Whitney.
Gunrunner's on top of the world. He wins the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Gunrunner with an unforgettable performance in the Pegasus World Cup.
Gunrunner, standing at Three Chimneys.
Catholic Boy, one of only three American three-year-old colts in history to win Grade Ones on both dirt and turf, including the immortal Secretariat. A graded stakes winner at 2, 3, and 4, from coast to coast, from 7.5 furlongs to a mile and a quarter. In 2018, the fastest three-year-old in the country over 10 furlongs by internationally successful sire More Than Ready. Catholic Boy, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
With 24 individual winners, 4 stakes winners, and 11 stakes horses, champion-elect freshman sire American Pharoah has made a stunning start at stud. The 2015 Triple Crown champion is developing into a truly international sire with winners in six different countries. American Pharoah also became the sire of the highest-priced horse sold anywhere in the world in 2019 when his yearling filly out of Leslie's Lady sold for $8.2 million at Keeneland September to Mandy Pope. With his book nearly full, hurry and call the team at Ashford to book your mare before it's too late.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Flavian Pratt asking a lot from Bellafina now. She is starting to pick up her stride, but she's got work to do. And here comes Leora. Leora and Channing Hill on the outside of Serengeti Empress, who digs in toward the rail. It's these two, Ladyapolis Third, the others with plenty of work to do. It's down to these two and Serengeti Empress, who's holding off the challenge of Leora as they come down to the line. Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks. Leora was second, Lady Apple was third, then came Champagne Anyone, Bellafina finishes fifth. The final time was 1 minute 50.17 seconds.
Welcome back. Mike Penna live from Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida. Big day here, but it's not the only place in the country hosting big racing this weekend. Tomorrow, the Houston Racing Festival takes place at Sam Houston. Larry Colmus had the call of the Kentucky Oaks, and Serengeti Empress, an Eclipse Award finalist, so impressive in winning that race, and she was impressive throughout her campaign in 2019. You want to talk about impressive. You look at the quality of the Houston Ladies Classic tomorrow night. At Sam Houston, tomorrow afternoon, I should say. You take a look at that field. You have Serengeti Empress. You have Out for a Spin. You have Lady Apple, who you just heard. She ran against Serengeti Empress as one of the contenders in the Kentucky Oaks. You have Street Band for Larry Jones with Sophie Doyle, 5-2 on the morning line. That race is as salty as they come, and great job by the folks at Sam Houston. I'm joined now by Chris Griffin here on HRRN. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you? We're enjoying our morning here in Houston, Texas. We're ready for a great Saturday of racing action. And then, yeah, tomorrow, as you said, it's going to be our big one.
I'll tell you what, there's no way on earth that's a grade three tomorrow night.
We have a lot of the same feelings here, but the team and Frank Hoff and the entire racing office, they've just put it together a great program here in Houston, Texas. And where we are geographically, the region, it provides a real opportunity to get these quality type horses. And yeah, you take a look at you're getting the winner of the Kentucky Oaks and the third place finish of the Kentucky Oaks. So when you get 2/3 of the trifecta in the Oaks, that's a pretty salty race. And we've got six runners in there that all have an opportunity here to have a big chance and start their campaign. And I know you had Jeff Bloom on earlier and talked about Midnight Bisou. So maybe we'll see a repeat and that one of these fillies or mares can go on to a real big campaign in 2020.
Yeah, congratulations to you guys on that honor, too. Midnight Bisou, the champion older female, she won this race, the Houston Ladies Classic, last year to kick off what turned out to be an Eclipse Award-winning campaign. And that has to mean a lot for you, for the race. And then to attract a field like this, Chris, that you have this year, you know, the momentum just keeps building for this race.
Yep, with everything that's happened in Texas, I know you guys spoke about it a couple weeks ago, but horsemen have responded, and everybody's really excited, and everybody around the office here and everybody in Houston that's coming out is talking about how they can't wait to show off their new duds and what they're going to wear, the clothes they're going to wear. We got everybody wants to dress up for tomorrow, and they're excited about it, and now we've got some real quality racing. And with that field of six, you talk about Serengeti Empress, you talk about Lady Apple, who's been training and prepping here, and she's 4-for-4 at the distance from a handicapping standpoint. It's kind of interesting to me. But you look at Street Band as well, and Larry Jones has won this race before, and Sophie Doyle, and they've teamed up and had a great campaign. So as far as launching their 2020, we love that they're doing it here in Houston, Texas, in this mile and 16th event. And it's race date on the program. It's part of our late pick four, and it should be a real exciting race to watch, see, and call, and hopefully we see a really great race.
Who knew that particular day of racing in Houston would become known for as much about fashion as it is about the racing? What's the over-under on the number of Stetsons that are going to be in attendance?
Yeah, I think when you take a look at the big days of racing anywhere throughout the country, as many racetracks have, when we start pushing that this is our biggest day of racing in Houston, Texas. Everyone wants to get ready to go. And usually we have our nighttime programs, obviously, on Friday and Saturday night. But this is an opportunity here to have a Sunday afternoon program, and we don't have that throughout the year. This is very special. It's specific to this day, and we've done that just to make sure that we can get as many folks through the gate that can join us. It's free admission tomorrow, so everybody should come on out. If you're in Houston, Texas, it's free admission for you. And we're just excited about it. I mean, I can't say it enough. I've come on full-time here the last two seasons, and to call Midnight Bisou last year and see what she did, I'm just really excited for the state of Texas. I'm really excited for the city of Houston, and I think we're going to see a great Grade 3. And the Grade 3 John B. Connolly Turf Cup is no slouch either. That's going to be the ninth race on the program. We got the Texas Turf Mile, that late pick four, you know, field of six, in race eight, but then surrounded by three fields of 12 in that late pick four, low take at 12%. So we're just excited. We're ready to go. Horses are still arriving. I'm here in the morning at the racetrack getting some more video that we'll post on our social media platforms, and we're going the right direction, and we just hope that the bettors respond, the city of Houston responds, and we thank you, Mike and HRN, for your coverage.
Yeah, of course. Talking with Chris Griffin here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, Sam Houston, a big, big day of racing tomorrow. And Chris, you mentioned if you're going to be in the Houston area that it's going to be a great day to be on site, and it will be, but you don't have to be there. If you're not going to be there, the program itself lends itself to some great betting opportunities with contentious fields, and you touch on a couple of the wagers that are available. But for people that are here in Florida or in Kentucky or California, anywhere else in the country, what things can they take advantage of when they look at this program from a wagering perspective?
So Sam Houston Race Park has always made strides, and again, credit to Frank Hoff, Senior Director of Racing Operations, and everyone at Penn Game and everybody involved with Sam Houston Race Park. As far as we have always wanted to make sure that we are better friendly and making sure that we offer enough wagering opportunities and give you, you know, we have our jackpot wagers, but we also have the pick fours, and we went to a dollar minimum on the pick three as opposed to a 50-cent minimum. So we want to give something for everyone. And as we developed that betting program, we got these wagers and that wagering format in place. And when we got that wagering format in place, we wanted to make it better friendly so that people had eyeballs on us. And then when House Bill 2463 passed, and now the purse money has increased and our field size has increased, it's all worked together. When you have a 12% takeout on your pick threes, pick fours, pick fives, last night we saw our early pick four, and that's our early pick four, return over $13,000 for 50 cents. So, if you're watching us, you're seeing prices. You're seeing some of the favorites get home. Carl Broberg won at 10-1 last night. So, you know, it's just an exciting time, and we put this whole program together. All the races are specifically placed for everyone to get involved and to watch us. And while all the racing world is watching us tomorrow, we hope that it's a great wagering event. We hope it's safe for all the horsemen and all the horses and all the jockeys. And we've got to perform and put out a great product, and that's what we're working hard to do. And I'm a small piece of that, but I'm looking forward to it. It's great to be in Houston, Texas.
Six stakes races tomorrow, including the two Grade Threes, the Houston Ladies Classic and the John B. Connolly Turf Cup. And you referenced the Texas Turf Mile. That's new here in 2020, and a race that's really been well received too, Chris.
$200,000 stakes race, Mike, and it's 1 mile on the turf, a beautiful John B. Connolly Turf course. It's restricted to 3-year-olds, and this is, at the beginning of 2020, it's kind of tough to find some of these turf races at a mile on the grass restricted to 3-year-olds. So they added this race in, or we added this race in this year, $200,000. And again, horsemen responded. We got a full gate of 12 in there. You've got horses coming from all over. And again, you see some value because there's some horses that are trying things for the first time that might have been running on the dirt, and now they're running on the grass. You know, we'll reference Bloom Racing again, but I think Tomatoto's got a big shot. Billy Batts is in this race, and Billy Batts ran second at over 55-1 there in the Breeders' Cup Grade 1 at Santa Anita, and Flavian Pratt is in to ride for Peter Miller. Tomatoto actually beat that horse when they both debuted at Churchill Downs at 5 furlongs on the grass. So there's value to be had. Billy Batts can definitely win. Is he an absolute lock standout? I don't think so. But, you know, Pixelate is in there from Mike Stidham. Danny Pish has got Deviant in there, and it just goes on and on. And one name that you've definitely got to recognize is Mike Maker, because when he sends horses over here in the turf races, especially on Houston Racing Festival Day, he usually ends up in the winner's circle in one or two of those events.
Well, Chris, we're looking forward to that special afternoon of thoroughbred racing tomorrow at Sam Houston. Looking forward to hearing your calls. And before I let you go, Bobby Newman is sitting behind me right now. He's part of our broadcast team this afternoon for our coverage of the Pegasus World Cup and the Pegasus World Cup turf. And he wants to make sure that I say hello from South Florida.
Bobby Newman, man. I kind of chased him around. I went to Gulfstream Park West for a little while, and then they gave me that 2-week stint at Los Alamitos. And I've always listened to Bobby growing up as a fan. And it's a joy to have other track announcers say hello once in a while, because I'm doing my best and we're getting there, and I'm happy to be a part of this game. And hello to Bobby and hello to everybody out there, and thank you, Texas.
Yeah, Bobby can't hear you, so I'll translate. Bobby, he said you can't hold a candle to him when it comes to calling races. Chris, listen, I appreciate it, brother. Thanks for taking the time. Thanks for all your support. And like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. So we'll do that, and enjoy the afternoon tomorrow. I know it's going to be special.
Thank you. We hope everybody watches, and enjoy the rest of your day in Florida.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Chris Griffin here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, again, huge, huge day of racing in Houston, Texas tomorrow. When I come back, we'll shift gears back to Florida, and I'll tell you about the programs that are happening here benefiting the horsemen. I'll do that with Lonnie Powell, who is the CEO and Executive Vice President of the FTBOA. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Gio Ponti, a 3-time Eclipse Award winner.
Gio Ponti adds the million to his Grade 1 collection.
Champion older male.
The champion, Gio Ponti, to take the Shadwell Turf Mile for Ramon Dominguez.
And 2-time champion male turf horse with career earnings over $6 million.
Final 16th of the Shadwell Turf Mile, Gio Ponti, Wise Dan, charging after Get Stormy. Gio Ponti from the outside. How about that? Gio Ponti will go back to the winner's circle.
In 2019, Gio Ponti is the sire of 10 stakes horses and 7 stakes winners from 5.5 furlongs to 12 furlongs, including Grade 2 winner America's Tail, Grade 3 winner Gucci Factor, and stakes winners Long Runner, Dubini, Giovanna Blues, and Olympic Runner. In addition, Gio Ponti has produced champion sprinter and Grade 1 Breeders' Cup sprint winner Dre Fong and $1 million Queen's Plate winner Sir Dudley Diggs. Gio Ponti, standing at Castleton Lions.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Gunrunner, the leading earner, best son, and heir to the Great Candy Ride, a 10-time graded stakes winner, including 6 grade ones, who retired with earnings of nearly $16 million. Gunrunner is now stamping his stock with quality foals that have lots of size, are great movers, and very athletic. The number one leading weanling freshman sire, with first crop weanlings selling for up to $750,000, and the number one leading freshman sire at the recently concluded Keeneland January sale. Horse of the Year, Gunrunner, standing at 3 Chimneys.
Racing fans, join us on Saturday for a tremendous day of racing here at Santa Anita and via satellite from Gulfstream Park in South Florida. Come see top sprinters go 6 furlongs in Saturday's Grade 2 $200,000 Palos Verdes, and don't miss the biggest race in North America this weekend, the Grade 1 $3 million Pegasus World Cup Invitational at a mile and 1/8 from Gulfstream. First post time this Saturday is at 12 noon, Santa Anita. Great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Adena Springs bred, raced, and developed Awesome Again and Ghost Sapper into important stallions. Now comes Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, bred, raced, and backed by the strength of Adena. A Hall of Fame runner like his sire and grandsire, Shaman Ghost captured the classic Queen's Plate at 3 en route to his Sovereign Award Championship.
And Shaman Ghost takes the Queen's Plate!
At ages 4 and 5, Shaman Ghost made cross-country history as the only horse in the past 30 years to capture both the Woodward Stakes and Santa Anita Handicap.
Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile.
Shaman Ghost would go on to earn over $3.8 million with repeated success at the highest level. Additional graded wins include the Grade 2 Brooklyn Invitational, the Marine Stakes, and Pimlico Special, before defeating the likes of Keen Ice and California Chrome, went second to Arrogate in the inaugural $16 million Pegasus World Cup. Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, standing at Edina Springs, Kentucky. Look for his fantastic first yearlings at the sales in 2020.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And there's a quarter of a mile left to go. Trophy Chaser, let go by Lionel Reyes, and 2.5 on top. From the outside, it's Mijos. From between horses, Garter and Tie. Then it's Code of Honor. Final eighth of a mile, Trophy Chaser trying to get home. Mijos going to try to nail him on the money. This is going to get close as Mijos starts to get some ground. Here's Mijos. Mijos is in time. Mijos ran down Trophy Chaser to win the Mucho Macho Man. Garter and Tie was third. Code of Honor disappoints at 4-5 and settles for fourth in 137-2.
That's Pete Aiello, the announcer here at Gulfstream, with the call to the Mucho Macho Man. Chance it getting the victory. The Florida bred stamping his ticket as a contender anyways at this point for the Kentucky Derby, at least a Kentucky Derby hopeful. Let's go with that direction. He is trained by Safi Joseph Jr., and Chance It Again, a Florida bred. We're going to talk more about that program coming up with Lonnie Powell in just a minute, but it is time now to focus on all of the three-year-olds, the leading candidates for the Kentucky Derby across the country, and we do it with our Calling All Three-Year-Old segment with our friend Bobby Newman, presented by Spendthrift.
They're all in line. They're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
Hi, this is Bobby Newman with this week's edition of Calling All Three-Year-Olds presented by Spendthrift Farm. A few interesting races for three-year-olds this past week. Last Saturday at Fairgrounds was highlighted by the Grade 3 LeCompte Stakes, 10 Derby points to the winner. A big field of 13 went to the post, and the Mark Cassie trainee Enforceable closed from far back to take the lead at the top of the stretch and win by a length and a half. He covered the mile in a 16th and 1:43.3 and will supposedly be pointed to the Risen Star Stakes at Fairgrounds on February 15th for his next start. About 4.5 hours before that, Blackberry Wine was super game, winning an allowance race. He took the lead early, was overtaken in the stretch, and then fought back to win by a length while covering the mile in a 16th in 1:43.1. That's about a half a second faster than the LeCompte Stakes later in the card. We should see Blackberry Wine in a stake next time out. Oaklawn Park held their opening day feature yesterday, the Smarty Jones Stakes. The track was money, but that certainly didn't bother the Steve Asmussen trainee, Gold Street. He popped the gate, went straight to the lead, and never looked back, wiring the field in the Smarty Jones and earning 10 very valuable Derby points with the victory. Well, no major Derby preps this weekend, but that all changes next week with the Robert F. Lewis at Santa Anita, the Withers at Aqueduct, and the Holy Bull at Gulfstream Park. So take a quick breath. The real fun's about to get started. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Lord Nelson, one of only three sprinters last decade to win three Grade Ones in a single year, along with champions Run Happy and Mitoli. His three consecutive Grade One victories included a stakes record performance in 107 3/5 in Del Mar's historic Bing Crosby Stakes.
Lord Nelson, a dominating performance, easy in the Bing Crosby.
An unrivaled blend of elite speed and pedigree. Lord Nelson, Pulpit's last great son. Look for his first yearling selling this summer. Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Number one is Independence Hall, in training at Tampa Bay Downs. Should be running February 8th in the Sam F. Davis or February 15th in the Risen Star at Fairgrounds for his next start. Number two, Maxfield. We haven't seen him since he scratched just prior to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. He's supposed to resume training in Florida sometime this month. Number three remains Thousand Words, winner of the Grade 1 Los Al Futurity. Should see him February 1st in the Robert F. Lewis or March 7th in the San Felipe. Number four, Dennis's Moment. Unlucky to stumble badly at the start in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I think we could throw that race right out. He is preparing in Florida for the Fountain of Youth on February 29th.
And number 5, Authentic, undefeated, won the Grade 3 Sham Stakes by almost 8 lengths last time out. We should see him March 7th in the San Felipe or March 14th in the Rebel for his next start. That's your Calling All 3-Year-Olds segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeder's Farm.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. The road to the Kentucky Derby going to be heating up and heating up quickly, no doubt about it. Didn't give you the Derby countdown at the top of the show today, so here you go. For those of you who are jonesing for me to get to this point in the show, 98 days, 8 hours, 6 minutes, and now just 32 seconds away from the Run for the Roses. Saturday, May 2nd, Churchill Downs. We will be there to bring you all of that exclusive radio coverage here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, once again in partnership with our friends at NBC Sports and with Westwood One. Head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out a complete HRRN broadcast schedule here for 2020. Well, one of the organizations that has been such a wonderful partner of ours over the past several years is the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association, and they are celebrating their 75-year anniversary here in 2020. Lonnie Powell is the CEO and the Executive Vice President. Lonnie, this is the 15th consecutive year of the Horse Racing Radio Network. We've got a ways to go to catch up to you guys. Well done.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Hey, 15 years is no small achievement when it comes to the broadcast world. So, good job by you guys, too. Let's don't make this all about me or FTBOA. Let's remember the fact that you and your team are to be congratulated once again for receiving your second ever coveted Eclipse Award of excellence in media. And you and your wife and the whole team should feel very proud. You guys worked very hard at that, and I know you don't do it to be recognized for awards, but it's nice to be recognized for the fine work you do, and we're just proud to be play a small part in all that. But good job to you guys. I was proud of seeing you up there on the stage.
Well, Lonnie, very kind of you to say. It was great to see you the other night. Looking forward to seeing you out here this afternoon, and thank you very much for the kind words. Let me brag on you and the Florida Bred program here for just a minute. Florida Breds have won, how about this, 19 Triple Crown races. They've won 52 national championships, and along the way, they've created 170 racehorse millionaires, which includes 66 Eclipse Awards going to Florida Breds, and he had a couple of finalists again this year with Imperial Hint and World of Trouble. The beat goes on, and it seems like every year we're talking about a major horse or horses bred in the state of Florida having an impact on the sport of thoroughbred racing. How do you keep it going, Lonnie? How does the program continue to be so successful here in Florida?
Well, I tell you, those are, our past has created extremely high benchmarks, and that always keeps you it keeps you pushed and trying. But I got to say, I know all those stats that you just mentioned, but to be in the audience and hear somebody else read them to me, I have to admit, I'm pretty awestruck and impressed.
Overwhelming.
The thing about Florida is we've never pretended to be the great state of Commonwealth of Kentucky. We were our own different approach to the thoroughbred breeding business, and do a lot of commerce back and forth with Kentucky. Of course, we're very close that way, but Florida itself, a little bit of an island, let's call it a peninsula. We need to produce great Florida breeds here, because they end up providing so much of the ultimate inventory of horses that race at these tracks, particularly Gulfstream and Tampa Bay. But we've also been just very blessed by having a lot of dedicated breeders and farm owners. And the thing about Florida breeds, we've talked about it on your show. Comparing stud fees and overall cost of conditioning and training and climates and all those kinds of things, Florida breeds tend to run beyond their pedigrees, and they have quite a bit of success. And you mentioned Imperial Hint and World of Trouble just this year. We're also fortunate enough that it seems like every year we'll get a number of these superstars that will campaign not only just in Florida, but across the country, and in graded races, and do so well. And I think, the great ambassadors for the breed. So You know, wish we at FTBOA could take credit for it. I think we try to do our part in promoting the industry, providing service and programs for our members. But boy, we've got some dedicated people that invest an awful lot. And let's face it, the horses make us all look good when it's said and done.
Visiting with Lonnie Powell, the CEO and Executive Vice President of the FTBOA on the Horse Racing Radio Network this morning. Lonnie, when somebody comes to you and they say, hey, look, I might want to start investing in some Florida breds, maybe buy some yearlings, some two-year-olds in training, whatever it might be, what do you tell them? What do you make sure that they know about the program here in Florida?
Well, first of all, we let them know they're picking a great location. If they also want to, have their babies raised here and ultimately condition them all the way up into their two-year-old year and beyond, because we have such a great climate, obviously a big assist by God, Mother Nature on that one. But in Florida, these babies get outside, as you know, early. They stay outside and are able to exercise often versus in colder climes where they spend a lot of their time inside. We, like the bluegrass, have some of the great minerals and so forth in our grasses and our soil. So it's a great place to build strong bone and to accelerate that growth. But we also remind people that if you're looking for ROI. We have some stallions that have sired some great progeny whose stud fees are extremely reasonable when you compare us to other of the major competing states. So it's a place that your chance of coming back on the ROI is probably stronger than in the average place. And you also have an opportunity to have access to some of the greatest, not only training facilities under some of the greatest climate, but some of the best in infrastructure when it comes to horse transportation, when it comes to veterinarians, when it comes to so many of the other professionals and specialists, exercise riders and so forth. It's a great place if you want to get going without getting involved with a too significant of investment and have a chance to have some fun, get some ROI. And, of course, we've got one of the greatest sales companies, especially with greatest two-year-olds in the world. They're in OBS right in the Ocala area as well. So, between the racing at Gulfstream, the racing at Tampa, but the breeding infrastructure, owning and conditioning structure in Marion County, it's a pretty darn good location to get involved in the business.
Lonnie, I'm about a minute and a half away from our next commercial break, the final break of the program, but I do want to give you an opportunity to talk about the legislative side of things for just a minute, because I know you spend a lot of time in Tallahassee representing issues that face horsemen and breeders here in the state of Florida. So what's the one thing right now that you're really focused on the legislative side of things?
We're focused on multiple things. I just came back from Tallahassee. In fact, drove from Tallahassee to here for the Eclipse Awards. I don't recommend that to everybody, by the way. It's a character-building drive. First and foremost, and we're united as a Florida thoroughbred industry here with the two tracks, and with the horsemen's groups and ourselves. We want to make sure that decoupling discussion stays just that, a discussion and not a reality. Our tracks want to run. Obviously, you can't have farms. You don't breed horses if you don't have tracks to run. And we're awfully solid there, and we think we've done a good job of educating the legislature on that, but you never let your guard down. Otherwise, we're always looking at ways to come up with even more creative and competitive ways to build purses and awards. And quite honestly, advanced deposit wagering is antiquated here and needs to have a relook in terms of how it distributes some of its wealth back to the industry versus to the pockets of the ADWs, many of which are out of state. So that would be a lot of what we're looking at. And we always just continue to also impress upon the economic impact of our industry. I mean, we're $3 billion a year as thoroughbreds, annual economic impact, almost 30,000 jobs. We're bigger than baseball spring training. That gets a lot of attention. So I'd say that's kind of our overall message package, but it's never easy, and it's always interesting, and it's always full of surprises. And we got about another month and a half to go here before the session's over.
Yeah, and you can visit FTBOA.com if you want to learn more about all the hard work and the incentive programs and everything that the FTBOA is doing here in Florida. Lonnie Powell, the CEO, my thanks to Tammy Gant as well for all of her help and setting things up and all of her support. It's a great team here at the FTBOA. And don't forget our coverage this afternoon, 4 to 6 Eastern, presented by the FTBOA and Red Brand Fence. You won't want to miss it, the Pegasus World Cup and the Pegasus World Cup Turf. Lonnie, appreciate the visit. We'll send you a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle, and we'll look forward to a special day of racing here in South Florida.
Sounds great, Mike. See you there. We're very proud to be a partner of yours, and we're very proud to be one of the original and ongoing sponsors of Pegasus World Cup Day.
Yeah, well said. Lonnie Powell here on HRN. Appreciate it, Lonnie. And, yeah, man, they do a great job. They really are working hard behind the scenes here. It is time for your Kentucky Bred Spotlight segment, a monthly report from the Kentucky thoroughbred industry. This Kentucky Bred Spotlight is brought to you by the KTA, KTOB. Kentucky Bred's the most celebrated horses in the world. At this week's Eclipse Awards, Kentucky Bred Bricks and Mortar was honored as 2019's Horse of the Year, making it 8 out of the last 10 that a Kentucky Bred has earned racing's highest honor. Kentucky Bred stormed the court, British Idiom, Maximum Security, Covfefe, Mitoli, Vino Rosso, and Midnight Bisou were also recognized with Eclipse Awards in their respective divisions. Kentucky Breds, breed them, race them, and raise them. We all win. For more information, visit KentuckyBreds.com. I'm back with more right after this on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown.
Multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire, World of Trouble.
World of Trouble and Manny Frickle win the Jiper.
World of Trouble takes the Carter.
One of the fastest horses of his generation, the son of Cantharos captured both the Grade 1 Carter on dirt and Grade 1 Jiper on turf this year and would go on to record 100-plus buyer speed figures in his last seven starts, including a 118 buyer as a three-year-old, the highest three-year-old buyer speed figure of 2018. World of Trouble, standing at Hillendale.
The championship meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park. Come and enjoy the heart-pounding excitement of live thoroughbred horse racing, showcasing some of the best jockeys and horses in the world, all while experiencing the best in VIP hospitality in South Florida. Make sure to book your experience for the Pegasus World Cup 2020 on Saturday, January 25th, blending entertainment, innovation, and thoroughbred horse racing like no other event of its kind. For more information on the championship meet or Pegasus World Cup, visit GulfstreamPark.com. That's GulfstreamPark.com.
Shadwell Farm, home to world-class stallions, presents two young stars. Mohamed, undefeated two-year-old, multiple graded stakes winner at 2 and 3. A dazzling son of Tappan, winner of his first 5 career starts, 4 in graded stakes. Grade 1 winner, Tamer Coos, winner of the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. This son of Spitestown was a top international miler that earned over $1.8 million. Shadwell Farm, building speed for the future.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell. Caraconti!
Gainsway stallion Caraconti, a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 132 and 4/5, recording a 114 buyer speed figure. From the Totney Arcos female family, his third dam is the hugely influential champion, Miesque. Caraconti was a precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and has already sired 3 first crop stakes winners and 2 additional stakes place 2-year-olds, including Kenzai Warrior. The Group 3 winner remains undefeated in 3 starts in England. And Caraconti has commercial appeal, with 2-year-olds having sold to major stables for $150,000, $365,000, and $460,000. Caraconti has the performance, pedigree, and physical, and stands value priced at $10,000 at Gainsway.
Hi,
I'm Kayla Stratt, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, sign up now for Blood Horse Daily and have the latest racing, breeding, sales, and industry news and analysis, plus entries, results, race replay videos, and more than that at your fingertips with the Blood Horse Daily app for your phone. You can do that. It's updated throughout the day or delivered daily in an email. Both of those are free. Simply go to bloodhorse.com/daily to download the app and sign up. Been a fun morning. Covered a lot of ground. Got a chance to talk to Chris Griffin down at Sam Houston. Got an opportunity to talk with Doug Cawthon from Three Chimneys as we continue to celebrate Gunrunner Week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We've been doing that all week long. Got a chance to hear from Jose Barrera, our industry star of the week, the groom of Omaha Beach. That was really cool. Congratulations to Jose, and thanks for all his hard work with Omaha Beach. Had a chance to talk to Jeff Bloom from Bloom Racing, talking about his champion, Midnight Bisou. You heard from trainer Chad Brown with Bobby Newman, and you heard from Lonnie Powell just a few moments ago. My thanks to all of our guests for making this show possible here today. Keep those Gunrunner moments coming at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. We received so many awesome pictures and Gunrunner memories. We want to hear from you. What is your favorite Gunrunner memory? Send us a picture, send us a video, whatever you want to do. Just tweet to us at HRN and let us know. Back this afternoon, 4 to 6 Eastern Time. Should be a good one. The Pegasus World Cup, the Pegasus World Cup Turf, that coverage presented by Red Brand and the FTBOA. You can listen right here on Sirius 219, XM 201, and horseracingradio.net. Now for my producer, Lee Dallapina, for Chauncey, handling all of our social media, and for my beautiful wife, Michelle, here on site, pushing all the right buttons. We'll talk to you this afternoon on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Go Steelers!